afternoon and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and as we like to say each week, this conversation can include you. Our phone lines are open. If you're calling us from Oahu, 941-3689 is the number to call. If you're on the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else and you'd like to join in, you can at 877-941-3689. It has been almost a week since President Trump issued executive orders on travel restrictions and immigration and refugee resettlement. Included in the orders is an indefinite suspension of immigration from 7 majority Muslim countries. American reaction has been swift. Outraged groups throughout the nation have legally challenged the action and issued statements condemning the majority policy statements or changes, which overnight split foreign-born students and faculty from their universities, employees from their workplaces, and families looking for a better life from boarding planes. Some U.S. allies, notably Britain and Germany, are also criticizing President Trump. In Hawaii yesterday, 23 groups joined the Muslim Association of Hawaii in holding a press conference to reject the orders. They say the executive orders are a direct attack on American commitments to treat people equally under the law, regardless of creed, color, background, or birthplace. Tonight, we'll talk with some of the organizers of the joint statement and find out where the protest goes from here. Joining us tonight, Hakeem Honsafi. You may know him as the executive director of the Hawaii Public Housing Authority. Tonight, he's speaking as the head of the Muslim Association of Hawaii. Claire Hannes is again here. She is an immigration attorney at Damon Key Lung Kupchak Hastert in Hawaii and also the past chapter chair of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She's also a founding member of the Hawaii Coalition for Immigration Reform. And rounding out our panel, Mateo Caballero joins us for the first time. He is the legal director of the ACLU of Hawaii. Of course, you're here too. And if you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And apologies for my voice. Unfortunately, I've got a bit of something going on like many people do, and we'll hope that it holds for the next hour. Welcome to all of you tonight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mateo, since you've never been here before, let's start with you. To get very clear about what these executive orders do, let's go right through them to put everybody on the very same page.
So I'm going to focus on the executive order that came out last Friday, and Claire perhaps can talk about the ones that came before then. The one that came out last Friday essentially outlawed or banned immigration from all immigration from 7 majority Muslim countries. It also indefinitely prevents refugees from Syria into coming into the United States. And finally, it prevents all refugees from coming into the United States, regardless of where they're coming from.
The word temporary was in there, too. But what that means and what indefinite means really is quite up in the air.
In theory, the refugee ban is for 120 days, except for Syrian refugees. And the other ban is for 90 days. But yes, they could be extended.
Claire, there was also another executive order a few days before that.
Right. There were two additional executive orders that came out on January 25th. And briefly, they dealt with defunding sanctuary cities, so cities and states that had come forward to declare themselves as places of sanctuary. And we can unpack that later if people have more questions. The one executive order dealt with building a wall, so border enforcement, which was, of course, quite controversial with many people, including the government of Mexico. And then in one of the executive orders, it also basically tore down the line, the priority line of who in the United States would be a removal enforcement priority. So leaving basically anyone who's an immigrant, a non-citizen who at any time had ever been charged or convicted of a crime, but also added even if you had just been charged with a crime and not convicted, that made you someone who might be subject to removal. And sometimes that means expedited removal where you don't even have the opportunity to go in front of an immigration judge.
What about for someone who has a green card? Is that also
Green card, absolutely. Green card holders are still very unprotected. It's only citizens who are protected from immigration consequences. Green card holders can be, and they are all the time, removed from the United States for criminal offenses.
The way we've been talking about it, plus the way we think of ourselves here in Hawaii, might lead a lot of people to think, well, this is something that we're discussing about over there, across the water. But this isn't something that happens here. However, from the stories that we have been hearing through just not just rumors, but stories that you have been able to document, Hakim Onsafe, what do you know in terms of any harassment that has been happening of late, and also in any potential, not necessarily to the level of maybe hate crimes, but certainly intimidation?
Yeah, I think this mean-spirited, un-American and reckless policy has emboldened the already evil people, per se, those who have been fostering some hatred for whatever reason. And now they feel emboldened. Our president says we can. Our president saying he can defend us in a lawsuit if we do something. The rhetoric that happened during the campaign. And we can see that there is certainly an increase even here in Hawaii. Not as bad as the mainland and others. Nevertheless, you know, there's our children who are of the age 9 and 11 have been insulted and called sand niggers and go back to your country. These little kids, they don't know anything other than this country. Or real multi-generational Americans, sisters who choose to wear the headscarf like some of the nuns do, and they've been attacked just for that. Go back to your country. And sometimes they've been told this by somebody who has an accent, and these are born Americans. Not as much as we hear. We thank God. I mean, in the mainland, it's obviously much worse. There are certain imams, which are the religious leaders, that have been executed in New York, execution style, the bullet to the head. Students in, at university, three of them, that were shot to death. Mosques that were burnt, and a lot of hate that just seemed to now be, it's okay, I'll get away with it. And you all heard the Delta worker in JFK, where the person actually starts kicking her and say, I have Trump on my side. Even after he was getting arrested by NYPD, the police, he was still saying, I have Trump on my side. So it is truly affecting law-abiding citizens for no reason other than the way they look.
Very often these things don't make it into the greater news, but within communities, that's where some of these stories are coming out. Mateo Caballero, what do you hear from some of those who have been bold enough to tell you what's happening here?
So concerning the executive order from last Friday in particular, I've heard at least a few cases of people actually affected by these orders. Not necessarily, you know, hate crimes or actions by the public, but people that, for example, have been split from their families, that students that whose families were traveling abroad, and now they cannot come into the country and join their partners just because of the executive actions. And there's also, you know, a lot of people are concerned about traveling abroad. Now they feel like even if you are not from one of those seven countries, if you just go outside of the U.S., all of a sudden the list grows. There are new countries in that list, and you cannot come back. So you're hearing a lot of fear from people about, you know, how this will impact their lives.
And what about foreign-born students who have been studying here and also foreign-born faculty?
Yeah, they are affected by the orders. As the orders stand, and Claire can clarify a little bit on this, but students are affected. But if they come from one of those seven countries, they cannot come in. Same with faculty that might be temporary faculty, and they're here for a semester. If they were abroad when these orders came in, they are affected by the orders. And even if they are in Hawaii, as I said, they now cannot go back because for fear of not being able to get back in the country.
Are there any specific cases that you know of with any of our universities where someone is in fact stuck? I'm seeing you nod your head.
Yeah, okay. We know of at least two cases. One is a PhD researcher here at the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Manoa, who is on J-1 visa, and now he's making the decisions to suspend his studies and research and go back because his wife is from Iran. And he's also from Iran on a visa, and she has a J-2 visa, and she's not able to come and join her husband. For them to be apart for 3 months, and the uncertainty beyond that, it's not just 3 months, the uncertainty beyond that. So that's one case. Another is a gentleman who's actually a green card holder, and the wife is also from Iran, who's also stuck, and he's in that limbo. Do they stay without their wives and children, or they go and forego all of years of research? And so it is affecting other people. Yemeni, born here in Hawaii, from Yemeni descent. She married a Yemeni gentleman, and he cannot come now join his wife. And she gave birth, so he hasn't seen that baby yet. So it's affecting real people just like any other person, and affecting them in a way that very mean to really separate. And we all for vetting, we all for security, we all for all of that. But to have a blanket, and not even given a decency of some kind of notice where people got stuck in transit, that's not what the United States is all about.
Or what a lot of people thought it was all about. Yes. Claire, any discussion with HPU because they have such a concentration with international studies?
You know, I have not had conversations with HPU, but I wanted to say that LPRs, lawful permanent residents or green card holders, it was very confusing after the executive order was issued whether they were going to be directly impacted by this. So it's been clarified by the Trump administration, no. Mm-hmm. Green card holders can still return into the United States, although they may be subject to additional screening at the airport. And while it may sound, you know, kind of easy to think about, well, just don't travel, just don't leave for a while, you know, that's fine unless your mother dies, right? Or unless you have a significant family event outside of the United States. Or maybe you are a student and you had – or a faculty or researcher and you had a conference that you had planned on going to. I mean, it has real – you know, parents being separated from their children – people being, you know, denied the ability to travel and return back from significant family events. These have real impacts, and it's such a short-sighted policy. I mean, in terms of you know, if people didn't harbor anti-American feelings prior to this, these kind of orders are sure the kind of things that can start people heading down in that direction because it's just so blatantly unfair.
We've already heard that, as we mentioned, the opening from our allies. We've certainly heard that from Theresa May, certainly heard that from Angela Merkel. I mean, there are people who we look at as being our true blue allies, and they're condemning this. Is that going to make any difference, do you think? Is it something that is even going to be approachable in terms of international pressure?
It's so hard to say. I mean, there were reports that Donald Trump was on the had a phone call last night with the Prime Minister of Australia, who's a very conservative. Malcolm Turnbull is from the Conservative Party, so you'd think they'd kind of, you know, be in the same camp. And the report was that he shut the phone call down a half hour before it was scheduled to end over issues that Australia's policy on refugees and asylum seekers is almost as bad or as bad as the United States. They don't even allow in Australia people to reach it to shore to seek asylum. So they catch people. They catch people. So they're stranded for indefinite periods. And these are people who've been fully vetted as refugees. And so the United States had struck a deal under the Obama government to resettle 1,200, not a huge number of people, but 1,200 of these people who've been waiting in limbo for a long time. And that was part of the discussion that apparently caused Trump to get so enraged that he hung the phone up on the Australian Prime Minister. So there are, and Australia is one of the closest allies that the United States has. So how this is reverberating throughout the world and affecting foreign relations to the United States, it's not doing us any good.
We'll continue to talk about that right now. That's somewhat of a matter of conjecture, but some of the realities that people are facing here in Hawaii. Do we have any sense of how many people are already in Hawaii coming from the countries that have now been shut down immigration-wise?
Oh, probably Hakeem. Talking about a couple hundred from those countries at the most, between 150 to 200. That's what it's affecting, but indirectly affecting everybody. We've seen a documented report, as an example, that American citizens of Muslim descent coming to the United States in the last couple of weeks, they went through the secondary screening. Of that secondary screening, 50 to 75% happen to be Muslims, whereby there is only 1% Muslim population in the U.S. So technically should only have 1% versus 50 to 75. And they've been asked very intrusive questions that has to do about religion. And I'm talking about U.S. citizens.
Okay, so what and what kind of questions?
Questions, which imam do you follow? What is what kind of speeches do you listen to? Who do you communicate with? What's your sect of religion? Are you Sunni? Are you Shia? And why are you following that? What kind of sermons do you listen to? Really, things that has to do with that First Amendment. I mean, I listen. And somebody would say, well, do you just want to see if you're following an extremist and all of that? But truly, that is not what it's all about. If you're an American citizen, I've been here for 30 years. Just to ask me that question, I take offense to it. I mean, because we fight terrorism a lot more with our words, with our deeds. And when you have, for example, I'm from Morocco, and we have no issues with Morocco and the United States for years. First country to recognize the United States is Morocco. But from friends and family, when they call and ask, are really the American people like that, all of them? And he said, no, it's just him and a few others, but he won. So he's given, not just himself, he's given a bad name to all the Americans. And there are American people that live all over the world, specifically in the Muslim world, that we're concerned for them. We don't want somebody taking that out of ignorance and do some un-Islamic act against the innocent people. But I don't think he's going to change. I mean, he told us who he was. I mean, during the campaign, told us his views about women, about Muslims, about Mexicans, about, you know, how he treats women. And I think to expect an elephant to become a cat or a lion just because he took that oath, I don't think that's going to happen. It really is going to take folks, citizens of this country, hopefully to put some pressures on the elected officials and both bodies of the House and Senate, Congress.
Which brings us to the whole point of where do we go from here? Many people have been outraged, lots of comments, lots of discussion. But after that, I mean, after you have your say, then what are you willing to do? That's our question tonight for you. Our number is 941-3689, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You've heard about the executive orders. You likely heard about the press conference yesterday with 24 groups, including the Muslim Association of Hawaii. Now what? Where do we go? We say that we're not like this. We say that this is the place of aloha, that we are a beacon for the rest of the country, that we all rub shoulders, that we live in this tiny place together. But then again, we hear about children being followed off a bus and intimidated. And where are we going to go from here? What are you willing to do? What are you willing to do? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Mateo Caballero, there has been a real galvanizing movement from the ACLU, your organization, but the national organization. What specifically is happening with that from this point forward, aside from the lawsuits?
Mm-hmm.
That's a court situation, but with the person-to-person and community-to-community part of this, what's going on with the ACLU?
Sure. So even before inauguration, the ACLU of Hawaii and other affiliates had been reaching out to communities. You know, we knew what was coming because, as Hakeem said, he said what he was going to do during his campaign. So, you know, I went to Maui, I went to the island of Hawaii and did immigration rights workshops to let people know what their rights are, because we know that there might be raids coming. So we're going to continue doing that. We hope to reach more people. We hope people know their rights, and that way they will have at least some protection from ICE and whatever is coming. That's one thing. The other thing is, and you know, we haven't heard that much about people affected in Hawaii by the executive orders, but it is important that people tell their stories, even if it's in an anonymous way. So we encourage folks to you know, reach out to people they trust and tell those stories and get them out there, because it's so important that, this fight is really about American values. It's really about what America is. And so one of the most effective ways to fight that, I think, is by telling people these are the people affected, people that came here because, you know, they were chasing the American dream. They believe in fairness and equal treatment. And now we are going back on those promises.
We're going to take some callers now. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We want to hear your story. If you are having an issue with immigration, if this is going to impact you, your family, friends, and if you want to not necessarily be totally anonymous, obviously we can't see you, so we don't know exactly who you are. But if you want to share your story with us, we'd love to hear it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to RB, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say it's so unfortunate that there are, you know, people being killed, Muslims killing other Muslims. And as we know, most of the people that are being killed in these conflicts are Muslims. And I think that it's a great thing to protect the Muslims that are in our country, those that see the Muslim religion as a religion, against those who see the Muslim religion as a basically a social force, something other than a religion. So I applaud the administration for keeping people from these countries from coming in here and hurting the Muslims that are here, because they want to settle some score between the Shiites and the Sunnis. So I fully support the president, the administration, and their work. And I encourage others to realize that Muslims, in fact, are the greatest targets of these Islamic terrorists. Thank you so much for your time.
Arby, thank you for your call. You just heard what he had to say.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that, Hakeem?
Two things. Number one, Muslims are not killing Muslims here in the United States. These are Christians. But we don't call them Christians because our religion, Islam, taught us that we don't judge religion based on act of people. We judge the opposite. We judge the people based on what the religion teaches. As much as Islam does not teach to kill a human life, we know Christianity doesn't. And therefore, all of these killings that happened here to the Muslims, they were committed by others of different faith, not the Muslims. Second, this is nothing but a disguise behind the real fact. None of those seven countries have committed any atrocities against the United States. I'll be more impressed if Trump or some of his supporters were bold enough to say, for example, well, Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda come from there, so therefore we're going to stop visas. They don't have the guts to do that. But no, let's go ahead and cover all the issues that exist, the Russian involvement and others, and pick on the most vulnerable population. These people are fleeing Syria. They're fleeing a dictator and the Russians' bombs. They're not fleeing from other Muslims. And they come in here because this is the country that's supposed to stand for liberty, for justice, for love, and compassion. And to tell those folks, no, stay there and die with the bombs of Vladimir Putin and others, it has nothing to do with that.
Well, and just also, you know, the refugee ban impacts not only people from those seven countries, but it impacts all refugees who are in the pipeline to come to the United States. And there's just not evidence that refugees who've been very, very carefully vetted outside of the United States are coming to the United States to cause problems. And really, I mean, if someone from even from one of the seven enumerated, you know, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Somalia, Libya, if from one of those countries wanted to do harm, there are so many other ways to do it than to go through the refugee pipeline. So to the fact that there's no evidence of refugees coming into the United States and committing atrocities, even from these seven countries, really just shows to me that President Trump basically kind of manufactured a crisis to try to scare people. And then a much larger crisis ensued where people are being left stranded outside of the United States who were scheduled to either come home or to come here to start their lives.
Part of what you're talking about is continuing to foment a culture of fear.
Absolutely. And you know, people say that they're afraid and that I think the reality, I mean, look at the mass hate crimes that have been committed in the United States in the last 5 or 10 years. You know, they have not been committed by refugees. They've been committed by kind of, you know, homegrown, either, you know, white supremacists or others who had a beef or people who, I mean, some were by the California incident. He had been a naturalized U.S. citizen, but he was from Pakistan. He wasn't even from one of these seven countries. So it's to foster this climate of fear that was created largely during the election and unfortunately was very successful.
Which brings it back to Hawaii. And are you going to buy into that? How do you feel about where the rest of the country is relative to where Hawaii says it wants to be? What are you willing to do in this growing culture of fear? And do you have any plans to be involved to help stop it? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Sachi, calling us from Kona. Aloha, Sachi.
Aloha.
Hi there.
On my kitchen table are the numbers for my senator and my representative. And first of all, Steve Bannon has not been confirmed by the Senate. And I don't understand why the senators and the congresspersons are not doing something about that, especially with the Russian influence that there's still an investigation, I think. 10 days to week. This is how to install a fascist dictatorship. And I am calling every day.
Good.
And is there anything I can say to my senator that would make a difference, by the way?
That's a very good question. Thank you, Sachi. When people call, and we always hear that, well, you know, call your representative, call your senator. Is there a way of speaking, Claire? Is there a certain something to be said that gets attention to, you know, let an elected official know that not only are you serious, but that this is a thought-out, informed position?
So we're, in my opinion, very fortunate in Hawaii that our two senators and our two congresspeople have come out very strongly opposed to Trump's executive orders on immigration. So thankfully, they're already on the right side, as far as I'm concerned. But they still need to be called and told that you agree with what they're doing and that you support refugees coming into the United States, the U.S. complying with the international agreements that we've signed, and that you support an inclusive, immigrant-friendly society. It's important, even if our representatives, we know they're on our side, they still need to hear from us because they're hearing from the people in opposition. We can also call and thank our Attorney General and our governor for coming out so strongly opposed early on to this executive order.
All right, we're going to go take a few more calls. Going to Michelle, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Michelle. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. Thanks for having me on. Okay, I, regards to your last caller, I've done the same thing, called my representative, expressed my concern on a personal level. I have run into Muslim women in stores that I've gone to, and I've reached out personally and told them, look, I'm a Jew. I stand with you. You're my sister. And I felt that, you know, saying that, even though I'm non-practicing as far as I don't do the religion thing anymore, but I have thrown my lot to people who have been oppressed, and I don't understand how our country can embrace what's going on right now. It breaks my heart. And what I would really love to see, and unfortunately I work full-time, so I can't be an organizer, but I would love to see a march on all of the capitals all over the country and on Washington, similar to the Women's March in Washington, only it'd be an interfaith march where we stand with each other and affirm that we are a country of immigrants and that we won't tolerate this white supremacist, hateful, misogynistic bent that is taking over our country right now. And I'll take my answer offline. Thank
All right,
you.
Michelle, thank you so much. There have been greater associations between Jewish organizations and Muslim organizations, including one that was formed that is both.
Yeah, we've always had a great relationship with our Jewish brothers and sisters. That has always, and it continues to be, they're one of our best supporters. But one thing that Trump did right, and there is only one thing I think, I can't think of anything else, and that is the silent majority is silent no more. As much as he brought up the worst in people, some people, he brought out the best in a lot of other people. I find myself hundreds of calls, and just like the lady right before now, they start crying on the phone, and I'm the one that consoles them. No, don't worry, we'll be okay. I mean, people are not just the Muslims, the non-Muslims. I mean, if you have a heart, you cannot help but to feel for the most vulnerable population, for the people that are persecuted, insulted for no other reason than saying, hey, I'm a Muslim. I choose this beautiful religion of Islam. So we've been getting a tremendous amount of calls, a lot of support. That's a lot more than the hate that we have seen. But the fear has always been something that people react to, unfortunately, and the Trump campaign has put that. All of the statistics shows that first of all, Islamic terrorist is just an oxymoron. It cannot be Islamic and commit an act of terrorism that goes against. It's like a Christian terrorist. It doesn't. You're either terrorist or you're not. But the studies has found, this is by Princeton University of FBI data, when they put in last from 1980 to 2015, 42% of the acts of terrorism in this country, in the United States, is by Latinos. And the extremists left followed, and then others, and then some other extremists. The Muslims, 6%. 6% of those claiming to be Muslims, and that's the total of this. But we are not in crisis. We are not in crisis of terrorism. The University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, they did a study and said that you are more likely to die with a brain-eating parasite, alcoholism, obesity, medical errors, risky sexual behavior than to die from terrorism. But yet, we take something, we start talking about it and talking about it, and all of a sudden it becomes a fact that we have to fear something that we shouldn't. We should protect our borders. We should be vigilant. But you know what? The only way to achieve that is actually working with the Muslims. And we have a good relationship, working relationship with the FBI here in Honolulu. We're the first one to see if somebody doesn't look right or whatever the case may be. And the United States would not have had any success in fighting the terrorism without the Muslim allies and other allies that's been fighting along the way.
Claire, you wanted to follow up on
that?
Yeah,
well, just in response to the question that you posed, Bethann, what can we do? And what Michelle said I thought was so beautiful about, you know, she saw some people and she just went up to mm-hmm. them and expressed her support. That was such a beautiful thing to do, and something that I have a daughter in middle school, and I was talking to her about if there were any Muslim kids in her school, and she says that there's at least one. Mm-hmm. Is a boy. It's in eighth grade. She's probably not going to go up to him and express her support. But I said, just kind of keep your ears open. And if you hear people talking, counter that. If you hear or tell me, because I want to know what's going on. I want that boy protected when he's at school. And so we need to really look out for each other and maybe go an additional step where we make a small act to show solidarity with someone who's feeling targeted. I think that goes a long way.
And to be able to counter fear-mongering and, the confluence of fear-mongering and ignorance.
Right.
All right, we're going to go back to the phone lines. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to A.W. calling us from Maui. Aloha. Welcome
Aloha.
To Town Square.
Hi How there. Are you?
Well, thank you.
Well, I was just listening to the gentleman saying that, yes, the Islamic community is like kind of the front lines of see what's going on and who shows up in town. And you know, but the thing is, what we have in the White House is part of an international fascist movement of racists. So they use racism, they use all these things to divide people up, to turn everyone into enemies and fighting among themselves. So that, and then they can target people at random, say if they accuse somebody of being a homosexual, that's one of the right-wing, totalitarian governments will use that accusation to silence somebody or intimidate people. If you look at the insignia of the CIA, you'll see a shield, and then you see an eagle behind the shield. The shield represents the shield of America's enemies, and behind the shield of America's enemies is an eagle. And the spies of America do not all have blue eyes, do not all have blonde hair, do not all praise Jesus, which I happen to do, but this is it's a fascist movement that wants to divide people.
Okay, well, A.W., we kind of know that. We've been talking about that for a while. But, you know, going back to, we can talk about the issue over and over and over again and what it is and how you see it. But how do you plan to go forward here in Hawaii in your community?
In my community? My community is a little larger than Hawaii. But if you, maintain the Constitution of the United States.
Well, that's interesting because we've got lots of little mini constitutions sitting on our table right now.
Ma'am? Yeah, well okay. That's good. Don't stand on it, but we need to stand on the Constitution and enforce it. And, of course, with the way that this strategy of overthrowing the government, which I feel if you have foreign powers spying on American citizens and reporting to one political party, or we see Ivanka Trump meeting with Vladimir Putin's girlfriend.
Oh, okay, I want to bring it back to this just because we're running short of time, but I think we've gotten your point. Thanks very much for your call. Going now to Mark calling us from Kahala. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm probably a minority view here. I'm not a white supremacist. I am a local business owner, but I would consider myself probably in democratizing. But actually, I don't really feel, I'm kind of thankful for the steps it's taken. I really don't feel that we have a white supremacist, but I just think it's logical and it's refreshing to actually not being taken advantage of and actually think about this logically and to stop and take a pause. And we have the highest risk populations that may be coming in and just do a vetting process. When I travel to Japan, when I go through customs and immigration, I'm asked very specific questions, and I think they do a good job at screening who's coming into the country. I just feel like it hasn't been done, and we don't really know who's coming in, and it hasn't been screened, and all we're asking about is vetting. I really don't think, people are saying, oh, it's white supremacist, it's this and that. I just think it's somebody that's not a politician is out of Washington taking a look at the system and saying, if we don't know our borders and don't know who's coming in, let's look and stop. I don't think it's about fascism or racism.
Okay,
and all these conspiracy
theories. I hear you, Mark, but I want to get you answers from two different people, and we're running.
And the gentleman has said it's there having to be 50% of Muslim screening. 100% of jihadism is happening from Muslims. Now, I'm not against Muslims one bit. A lot of my friends, my colleagues, and physicians are Muslim, and I respect that. I don't look at people boxed, but if 100% of something jihadism caused by them, it would make sense to sample that population. It's just logic.
All right, Mark. Let me get you an answer here. Do you want to take that first?
Sure.
Mateo.
So, and I'm sure Claire can explain more about this, but the vetting process for coming into this country is very thorough. It's actually very difficult to come, already very difficult to, if you're from one of those countries, to come here on any visa or even become a refugee. It takes sometimes years. So there was no need for these orders in terms of vetting. The vetting was already there in place. And as Hakeem said, no one from those countries, and again, no one from those countries has committed a lethal terrorist attack in the United States.
Right. I think what the caller doesn't understand, and I understand why he wouldn't, because most of us don't see this, but the visa, the process of getting issued a visa overseas is incredibly lengthy. There are already background checks. You have to go in for an interview. From all of these countries, you have to go in for an interview. And I would guess that most people who apply for visas from these seven countries are denied anyway. So it's a very few people who actually, a very, very small number, that actually get issued visas. And then we have to look, again, beyond, that and look at how does banning refugees worldwide who have been, again, through numerous background and security checks, international, national databases, all of that. It's been an 18-month to a two-year process for them to get to the point where they're ready to be issued their visas to come. How does keeping those people out make you and Kahala feel any safer? I have a really hard time seeing that.
And from a constitutional point of view, it should be an individualized decision. The way the Constitution prevents discrimination is that it prevents people, judging people based on where they come from, based on their religion, but instead it has to be a case-by-case basis. And what these orders do is they're saying, making a blanket statement that these people are a threat. And we know in Hawaii, there is a history here in Hawaii, a civil rights history about internment camps. And about how at one moment in time we also judge people based on where they came from. And I think Hawaii is an example in that it actually, the people here organized and stood up. And even though it had one of the largest Japanese American and Japanese populations in the country, the number of people that were sent to internment camps was relatively small.
Hakeem, do you want to respond at all or shall we move on?
Thank you. No, he said we have to use the logic. If we use the logic, 900 diplomats who work on this day and night and scores of security experts says what Donald did will actually make America less safe, not more safe. So that's logic. If we follow logic and we consider Timothy McVeigh that did the FBI building bombing and you call him a jihadist or you call him just a poor guy that killed people, if you consider him a jihadist, it's only 6%. That's logic. Those are the data. But the rhetoric of the campaign makes it seem otherwise. So let's really follow logic. And it's not logical that Donald Trump not follow 900 diplomats and security experts just because he wants to deviate from the real issues. This is just hiding behind what the real issues are. And we all know what those are through the campaign and the Russians and all of this. So, yeah, I think we should definitely follow logic. And part of logic is education. We have to educate ourselves instead of just making stuff up. Let's really go to the sources. Don't go to hate.com. Go to FBI.com and see the real statistics. And that's all I want to say.
All right, we're going to move on and take more of your calls. If you want to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're considering the response to President Trump's executive orders on immigration and travel restrictions. What do they mean for Hawaii? Do you have a story? Have you been affected by this? Do you have friends or family affected by it? And more to the point, if you don't agree with this, what are you willing to do to be able to not only make your opposition known, but to be able to address some of the issues happening in Hawaii in very small corners that might, in fact, be something that would show us that maybe we're not the kind of place of aloha that we'd like to think that we are. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Piper calling us from Kona. Aloha, Piper.
Hi.
Piper, you're going to have to turn... No, I can't hear you. And until you turn down your radio, we're not going to be able to hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay. Yes, if in my opinion, by the way, I'm an 18-year-old college student here in Kona. This order makes us less safe. You know, it gives fuel to the propaganda fire. Extremists can just take this footage and splice it how they like and show it to moderate Muslims and recruit for these extremist movements. They can be like, wow, the Americans really do hate us. Look.
Well, you know, I'm watching Hakeem nod, and I'm going to ask him to respond to you. Thanks very much, Piper, for the call.
Thank you for saying that, because they have already started. They have already taken Trump and pictures of this little boy, Syrian boy, that trying to cross to Europe and died. His little body was washed in the waves, and Trump making his statement when he pointed, said, "We don't want you here." So they have already started that campaign. I think what Donald Trump has really forgotten is that America was built on the backs of immigrants and was paid for and still maintained by those who pay taxes. Unfortunately, he neither built it nor paid taxes to maintain it. So I think he's the last one who should be telling U.S. citizens that just happen to have a different accent, a different religion, not to come to this country. But yes, I hate to say it, it is a recruitment tool.
Going now to Rena, calling us from Haleiwa. Aloha, Rena. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, hi. I have so many comments about this, but I'm going to keep it simple. I am very curious about, is this constitutional? Like our First Amendment rights of being able to practice religious freedoms and all of that. It seems completely discriminatory against Muslim people, and a lot of people, whether you're on the right or the left, believe in the Constitution, and is this constitutional, and can it be somehow repealed or challenged?
Well, there are challenges right now. We've had, at least 15 or 16 lawsuits since the executive order?
Yes, there have been 14, as far as I know, targeting the executive order from Friday. Four of those resulted in temporary restraining orders that affect the executive order nationally, and actually prevents currently the status of the executive order is that once you are in the United States, they cannot detain you, they cannot remove you, take you out of the country, and in fact, in theory, they shouldn't be able to prevent you from even coming into the country. Pursuant to those orders that essentially tell Customs and Border Protection to admit people, and that the orders are not in effect, because they have been challenged precisely for what the caller talked about. We don't have a religious test in the United States. We have to treat everyone equally, regardless of their creed, regardless of where they come from, regardless of how they look. And these orders do just the opposite.
All right. Thank you very much. Going to go on now and talk to Grace, calling us from Pune. Aloha, Grace. Welcome
Aloha.
To Town Square.
I have worked many times with immigrants, whether they came from Beijing or from Argentina, from Italy, and it was all to help them come into the community to find out what our, you know, how we do things here. And I, too, called my Congress people and senator and all that kind of stuff. But I think what we need to know is that people, when they come here, they want to work hard, provide for their families. And if you see somebody picking on somebody, you tell them, cut it out. You know, because, you know, people are coming here not to kill us. They're coming here to exercise their right to be free. And I know from many people how afraid they are when a cop comes to the door. They're afraid they're going to be hauled away. And I don't have a whole lot of Muslims here in the area that I live in, but the thing is that I see somebody doing wrong to somebody, I say something.
So, Grace, I mean, that's in some ways, more of a rarefied position. We hear from a lot of people who will say what they feel about something, but when you ask them, well, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to act in the community? Will you walk up to somebody and say something? They're far more reticent because in some cases it's cultural, that you're not mixing in. You're not going to go over there and insert yourself into somebody else's life. But, you know, you seem to be the kind of person who would walk up and say something to somebody anyway. Okay, I think we lost Grace. But that's the point. I mean, for a lot of people who, and this goes across all kinds of issues, from whether you see a parent browbeating a kid inappropriately in a restaurant or in a market, or if you're going to walk up and be concerned that someone is treating someone in a way that would be less than appropriate, given the fact that they may be simply different.
Right. There are a lot of people feeling under attack right now, and those of us who don't feel under attack, we need to step up and be allies to them.
All right. We're going to go now to Lisa, calling us from Eva Beach. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. You know, I feel like in Hawaii, how fortunate we are that we are a blue state, and all of our reps are pretty much from our tribe, if you will. You know, I feel sometimes like we can't do enough over here, because we can't call our senators every day except to thank them for doing the right thing. I think that one thing that all of us can do is to give time, give money to the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Anti-Defamation League. There's so many different organizations that really are out there working hard, more on the mainland, I think. And, you know, they can use the funds and they can use the support. And they can just use people that, I mean, I talk to anybody who will listen to me.
Because, you know, Lisa,
I carried signs in the 60s. I never thought I'd carry signs in my 60s.
Yeah, you know what? You know, we're hearing a lot from people in your generation that this is, in some ways, for them, the 60s all over again. And how are you really going to be active in a way beyond just, you know, being on social media and being able to pop out a tweet or put something on your Facebook page or take a picture and pop it on the Instagram, but really, what are you willing to do?
Exactly.
And many people have said the same thing that you have said, that if you physically can't get out and do something, you can support those organizations which can. Thank you so much for your call. Good reminder.
And I think there are things you can do locally, not just, you know, the policies being set at the national level, but there are protections you can pass in reaction to these executive orders, and there are going to be more executive orders. So, for example, one of the callers talked about the immigrant communities being afraid of cops here locally, and you know, a lot of cities and states are essentially preventing cops from enforcing immigration law. Because it shouldn't be the case that if you're an immigrant, you're afraid of calling your local police for help.
Well, that goes back to the sanctuary cities idea.
Yeah, and I think that's something we perhaps should consider here in Hawaii. If in fact, you know, we're a blue state, we want to protect our immigrants. These are our values, and we want to push back against being essentially accomplices to really terrible policies at the national level. Then I think it makes sense to think about it. And the ACLU's position on this is that the threat to cut off funds to local police and other funds to Hawaii, it's that threat is also unconstitutional.
Yeah, just one thing that Lisa said really struck me when she said, you know, that she talks to people. And I think that's really important, that although these actions, I would argue, are somewhat evil in intent, not everyone, like some of the callers we've called in, not all the callers who support them are evil people. We need to engage. We need to talk. We need to listen. We need to try to understand what's driving people to support these and to try to counter them with our own experiences and our own stories.
Well, a part of that, as we talked about earlier in the program, is fear, or simply not knowing certain facts, which you could research if you wanted to. We're going to move on and talk to Mario, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Mario. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Bertrand. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course.
I just want to comment. I'm from Mexico, originally born in Mexico, and I'm a legal resident now. My wife and I, we're planning a trip to Mexico. Actually, we already bought our tickets this coming March. But uncertainty that these situations bring to immigrants on how they're going to react in the border is what is fearful to me.
Are you canceling the
band,
your trip?
The band was, yes. The band was supposed to be used, or what I understood, was for people who was trying to apply to be a refugees in the country. But the surprise was that people who already have legal status was detained on the airport, and the uncertainty that this brings to the immigrant community coming, going out of the country and, of course, returning back is what is, what afraid.
So, aside from your personal situation and having canceled this trip, Mario, what are you doing to be able to get some of this moving through the community that you associate with in any way, professionally, personally, socially?
Because, well, what I see on this issue is only a ripples of a pebble. What President Trump before was saying is against Muslims, against Mexicans, against Latinos, and the underlayment of this executive laws is the people that he doesn't agree with are going to be banned from
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just, you know, having talked about that and understanding kind of the problem side of it, looking at, okay, what is then going to be solutions, you know, personal solutions for you. We've heard from several people saying they're going to talk to people more, that they're going to be engaged more, they're going to give to organizations that are challenging these executive orders and those that may yet come down the pike. But, you know, for you in whatever community you associate with, your neighborhood, are you telling your story? Are you moving, you know, through the people that you know to let them know that this affects you?
Actually, this is the other way around. When this implementation came into order, I was approached for different people from the community asking, hey, how this affects you? And I say, well, so far, it doesn't affect me. But I really don't trust what is he doing. So just be careful. And I say, yeah, I need to be watchful what's coming.
Well, how lucky you are that people were looking after you. Thanks so much for the call, Mario. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the hour. It's gone quickly by, as it usually does. Clearly, we are on a path and a journey that we don't know really very well where it's going. We have some indications based on who this man is and some of the things that we have seen. But as the three of you look at where we're going, watchwords for you, final thoughts from you, not just about these executive orders, but in general as we move forward. And Hakeem, I'll let you go first.
Thank you. I think we have to know that it's not just one man. He is surrounded by Bannon and General Flynn, which are truly definition of what a bigot is. So we have to be really watchful of that. We have to be Hawaii. Something good has to start from Hawaii. Continue those words of comfort. They really mean a lot. Do thank all of the folks that's been supporting everybody. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying we're moving through, so I have to say goodbye and thank you so much for your participation, Hakeem.
I thank you.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Mario, I'm sorry, Mateo, very, very quickly.
Sure. So in terms of how people can help the ACLU, if you hear stories about people being affected by the orders or if you want to do outreach, please call us at 808-522-5906 or toll free at 877-544-5906.
And Claire, you got about 10 seconds.
If you're an immigrant and you have a question, talk to an immigration attorney.
And we just happen to know one or two or a few of those. And to all of you who called in, thank you so much for your questions and your comments. We all got to keep talking about this and many other issues that affect us here, that affect us in our country and globally. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning for The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.